Tonight's scripture reading is going to come from the book of Hosea, chapter 11. We're going to start with verse 12, and we're going to go through chapter 12, verse 5. So bear with me there. It's going to be Hosea 11, chapter 12, and through Hosea 12, the fifth verse. Ephraim was surrounded me with lies, and the house of Israel with deceit. But Judah still walks with God and is faithful to the Holy One. Ephraim feeds on the wind and pursues the east wind all day long. They multiply falsehood and violence. They make a covenant with Assyria, and the oil is carried to Egypt. The Lord has an indictment against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. He will repay him according to his deeds. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel, and in his manhood, he strove with God. He strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. He met God at Bethel, and there God spoke with us. The Lord, the God of hosts, the Lord is his memorial name.
Okay. If you don't have one of these outlines or one of the little booklets, they're back on the table, and feel free to take a journey back there and grab those if you would like. The booklet is a guide for each of the lessons that we're going to be having this evening. And tonight's is Jacob, Trailblazer with a Purpose. And then we're going to have other characters that are going to be discussed, other Bible figures who are trailblazers with a different kind of emphasis. But with Jacob, we're looking at how there was a purpose in his life, and he was actually a trailblazer with a purpose. This outline, I don't know if you're like me, but when I read a book, the first thing I do is look at the table of contents, because I like to have an outline in my head of what's going on. I'm sort of a big picture kind of person anyway. And I like to get an idea of the forest for the trees before I delve into the details. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not good. That's the way I operate. And so I would like for you to look at this outline. Now, you will notice that you have an A, B, C, D, E, and F of different things that occur in the life of Jacob. But then in a reverse order, you have an F, E, D, C, B, A. For those of you who are very serious students and have taken some time to read what a lot of scholars have to say, you may have heard this term chiastic structure or chiastic structure. It's also pronounced. And that's what this is. And generally speaking, it has a repetition of different themes. They don't always occur at the same time. The middle themes usually occur back to back. But if you look at the first A, you will see there is a struggle at birth. This is for Jacob and Esau, and the birthright. But if you look at the bottom A, there are also blessings that are extended and a struggle at birth, talking about the struggle that Rachel had with Benjamin that took her life. You go back up to the first B, and you have deception and strife with the Philistines. This is on the part of Isaac. And then on the lower B, you have deception and strife with the Hivites. This is regarding the rape of Dinah, the daughter of Jacob and Leah. The top C, you have a stolen blessing and the flight to Paddan Aram. The lower C, you have a restored gift and a return to Shechem. So sometimes you'll have opposites, but with the same theme. The top C, you have a stolen blessing. The bottom C, you've got a restored gift. Then you have the top D, the promise of a blessing at Bethel. The lower D, the struggle for a blessing at Peniel. The top E is Laban deceives Jacob. The lower E is, guess what? Jacob deceives Laban. And then the first F is the birth of children, and then the second F is the birth of the herds. There's a lot of of literary craft work that goes into the composition of the Bible. It definitely, I think, points to the inspiration of the Bible. There is a design in the way the story is told. I think that's a beautiful thing. We don't always see it when we get in there and read, and so I think these kind of things are helpful. But I want you to also notice some recurring themes that are in this outline. On the negative side, you see the word deception. You see the word strife, and you see the word struggle. Those themes are repeated throughout the life of Jacob. Also, on the positive side, you see terms like birth, blessing, birthright, and God is also present in this process. And so if we want to get a big picture of what is going on in Jacob's life, and to appreciate the fact that there is profound purpose in his life, all through his life, there is profound deceit and trickery, heavy-handedness that he's engaged in himself, but that's been done against him. But there are blessings all over the place. There is the birthright that is fulfilled, and you look at deceit and you look at blessing, and you think, how can the two of these exist together? That doesn't really make sense to us. How can we be blessed while we're suffering? That's a difficult thing for us to wrap our brains around. But the life of Jacob is a pretty good indicator of how that can happen. But we have to adjust our expectations as just what does it mean to be blessed. So let's get into the text just a little bit. I want us to look in Genesis chapter 25. And I'm going to be looking at this outline pretty much the whole time as I go along, but there are some places I've only got 40 minutes, so there are some places I'm just going to have to skim over very rapidly, and there's other things I will, if I have time, go into a bit more depth. But you could take an entire quarter easily for the life of Jacob, so I'm going to give this my best. Genesis chapter 25, beginning in verse 19. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord granted his prayer. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her. And she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord, and she said, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, the older shall serve the younger. And when her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. That's why his name was called Jacob, because his hand was grabbing Esau's heel. The name of Jacob, that Hebrew word is rather complicated, and it can mean a variety of things. But the consistency in this definition of this name is that you have something being overtaken, overpowered, conquered by means of deceit or trickery. All right? That's his name. And if you're familiar with a lot of the names in the Bible and the meaning of those names in many ways define their life story. Deceit and trickery are either going to be committed by Jacob or experienced by Jacob throughout most of his life. And so if this is his name, and if in this some way contributes in a powerful way to his identity, I will add not the most powerful way, but in a powerful way to his identity, then how can we think of Jacob as having a life of purpose? How can we think of him as a trailblazer with a purpose? And that can be a challenge. But this is the groundwork that's laid. It is the meaning of his name. There is a struggle taking place in his mother's womb from the very beginning. And you've probably heard questions asked about this. Did they really not like each other before they were born? You know, I don't know what to do with all of that. And I'm not going to try to answer that. You know, what was going on in this little baby's mind when he reached out and grabbed his brother's heel? I don't know how to answer that question, all right? But I do know there is an awful lot of symbolism in this journey that plays out in the way this story is told. And so, keep in mind, his name means deceit, trickery, overpowering, taking over someone by that means. Now, let's see how this theme continues throughout his life. In this next section, in chapter 26, we've got the behavior of Isaac. Now, Jacob isn't the one directly participating in this behavior, but we're seeing it. Isaac repeat a pattern from Abraham, his father. Jacob's alive, and so he is living in this culture where this deceit is taking place. And so, I'm not going to have time to read all of it. Let's go to verses 6 and 7. So Isaac settled in Gerar, and when the men of the place asked him about his wife, he said, "She is my sister." For he feared to say, "My wife," thinking, "lest the men of the place should kill me because of Rebekah, because she was attractive in appearance." There's the deceit. Abraham, his father, did the same thing, didn't he? Well, Abimelech finds out about this. He's not real happy with Isaac. He goes and he finds Isaac. He's actually recognizing that Isaac's been very prosperous, but he's saying, "Why did you lie to me?" And so they manage to reach a truce. This is one of those sections I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on, but I just want to mention it because it does contribute to the environment of Jacob's childhood where deceit, it did exist there. And I don't know if Jacob was there when this took place or not, but this is a part of his culture, it's a part of his environment, and he would carry that with him. Now, let's go to the very well-known story in chapter 27, beginning in verse 1. When Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare for me delicious food such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." I wonder if Jacob learned some of his deceit from his mother, because she's going to be participating in one of the most infamous stories of deceit that we have in the Bible. Beginning in verse 6, "Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, 'I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you.'" So that's pretty forthright, isn't it? "Go to the flock and bring me 2 good young goats, so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing." His mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go bring them to me." So his mother goes and gets a lot of Esau's clothing, and she puts it on Jacob so that Jacob, if Isaac feels of him, which he will, He will fill Harry. She goes and prepares the meal that Isaac loves, that he had requested Esau to bring back to him. And so the deceit is carried forward. And Jacob goes in. He says he is Esau. Isaac says, but you sound like Jacob. And so he wants to feel of him, and he feels of him, and he's hairy just like Esau. And so he pronounces the blessing on Jacob. Now, what is the difference between a birthright and a blessing? The birthright is the anticipated inheritance of all of the possession that that father owns. But the blessing has potentials for things that the father may be involved in that could bear fruit in the future. And there was some legal leeway for a father to be flexible with this. There was no societal binding code that would have bound Isaac to say, you must offer your blessing to your firstborn. That was usually the way it worked, but it was not binding. But what was considered binding was one's word. And even though under the umbrella of deceit, when Isaac gave Jacob his word that he would receive the blessing of the future prosperity, as we understand being the blessing of the covenant set forth by God, Isaac was felt bound to honor that because it was his word. Well, let's look at the reaction here. Beginning in verse 30, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, Esau his brother came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me. His father Isaac said to him, who are you? He answered, I am your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, who was it that hunted game and brought it to me, and I ate it all before you came, and I have blessed him? Yes, and he shall be blessed. As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. But he said, your brother came deceitfully. You notice how often this word appears. And he has taken away your blessing. Esau said, well, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And then he tries to get Isaac to give him a blessing, but Isaac can't do it. And Esau is so upset that he knows his father's getting old and his health is declining. He's going to have, 20 more years or so left to live, but he's already thinking ahead about the day when his father dies, and then after that, he will murder his brother Jacob. And his mother hears that too. So, what are your impressions of this family system so far? Now, we've got favorites, don't we? Who favors who? Isaac favors Esau, and Rebekah favors Jacob. Now, I hope you all understand that having favorites in a family is incredibly dysfunctional. Okay? In my career as a marriage and family therapist, I never saw a situation, well, of course, if they came into me, there was an issue they were struggling with anyway. But if it was a family relationship issue, and if there was favoritism in that family, that always contributed to the dysfunction. Okay? Now, we all have dysfunction in our families. I have dysfunction in my family. But I can tell you, we don't have a favorite child. And so that does not contribute to the dysfunction of our family. Boy, it does here. It does here to the sibling rivalry to the point of murder being desired. All right? Life with a purpose so far? You seeing it yet? Well, there's been a blessing extended, but the emotional environment doesn't look that conducive to success, does it? You ever been there? You ever read the Bible and know that God has blessings planned for you, but you're not feeling it? Well, there's a precedent. Okay. So, Rebekah has heard that Esau plans to kill Jacob. So she is telling him, go to Laban, her relative, and he'll take care of you. There's going to be some good things waiting for you there. But what Jacob comes to realize is he's going to be the victim of deceit. When he comes to Laban, he sees that Laban has this beautiful daughter who is shepherding out in the field. And after he moves this giant stone away from a well, he runs to her. The impression is, this is the first time he's met her, but he runs to her and he kisses her and he cries out loud. You don't hear of first dates like that very often anymore, do you? But it happened here, and he is obviously smitten with Rachel. So Laban's agreed to let him work for him. You know the story. What is the story behind the agreement that Laban and Jacob reach regarding Rachel? Work 7 years and you can marry my daughter Rachel. Okay. So he works the full 7 years, and then wedding day comes, and who does he realize he's marrying? Leah. Okay. Deceit, trickery, rear their ugly heads again. Boy, the name sure does mean something. By the way, think about this. Is it evident that Esau knew the meaning of the name Jacob? Yeah, he explicitly said that, didn't he? Well, does it stand to reason that if Esau knew what the meaning of the word Jacob was, that Jacob would know the meaning of his name? You ever thought about that? You ever thought about you having a name and there being a negative connotation to that name? I wouldn't like that. That would feel a little bit spooky to me. Now, I'm used to names not matching a child's personality. My oldest son, his name is Creighton. And you know what the meaning of Creighton is? A gentle little rolling stream or brook. That is not my son at all. That doesn't resemble him in any way, shape, or form. Now, my younger son, maybe. Maybe we didn't name our children correctly, huh? But that's different than having a name that means something bad, a name that is painful. So he's growing up with this name, and now he's experiencing more of the meaning of his name. Not only has he dished it out, but it's prevented him from being married to the woman he loves. The meaning of his name. So after that, there's another agreement that is reached with Laban. And you know the story, work 7 more years, and then you can marry Rachel, she's my youngest. And he says ostensibly, he has to marry Leah first because she's the oldest, but then after that he can also marry Rachel. And so he marries Rachel, and do you think everything's happy? No. What's bad about this situation now? What do you know about that story? Rachel cannot bear children, so Leah can. Okay? So what happens? She bears initially 4 sons. You remember what she says after she bears each of these sons? Now my husband will surely love me because he's given me a son. All right. Did it happen after the first one? No. It didn't happen after the second one. It didn't happen after the third one. It didn't happen after the fourth one. So she stopped bearing children. Well, after she stops bearing children, Rachel notices that all right, Leah's got these four sons, and I don't have anything, and she doesn't think she can have a son, so she has her own maidservant to lie with Jacob and then bear her a son. So what does Leah do? She gets her own maidservant to bear children through Jacob. Boy, this isn't sibling rivalry. This is dual wife rivalry, where the husband loves one but doesn't love the other. And so, let's read let's go to chapter 30 and verse 14. In the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But he said to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" Rachel said, "Then he may lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes." When Jacob came from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes." Boy, that word hiring just has a bad connotation to it, doesn't it? It really does. So he lay with her that night, and God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, "God has given me my wages because I gave my servant to my husband." So she called his name Issachar. And then she goes forward and she bears Jacob a sixth son. His name is Zebulun, and afterward she bore him a daughter whose name was Dinah. And then after this, Rachel finally has a son whose name is Joseph. Now, in the middle of all of this setting, all of this discord, all of these ill feelings, all of this pain that has been the result of deception on the part of more than one person, let's go back to chapter 28. Yes. What is a mandrake? Anybody know? You know, there's a reason I'm asking you. Because I don't know. I have heard, and I'm trying to remember, I want to say it's some type of fruit, but I'm not positive about that. That's just not one of the things I looked up in preparation for this lesson. But whatever it was, it must have been pretty important. And I could be right. It might not be a food item to be consumed at all. I just don't know. I'm trying to remember. The root of a plant. Okay. So a root that would eventually produce something that's consumable. Thank you very much. And it's obviously it had some very high value to Rachel. But the point of the story is, look at the discord between these women. Now, in the middle of all of this discord, we go back to Genesis chapter 28, beginning in verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and went toward Haran, and he came to a certain place and stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. He dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? There is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Okay. So in the middle of all of this turmoil, he has this dream, and no doubt you've heard of the dream of Jacob's ladder, and he's basically having the covenant repeated to him by God that had been stated to his forefathers. And when you look at Jacob's reaction here to this dream, do you get the impression that he believed what God was telling him? I do. I get the impression that he believed it very strongly. And so you hear a message like this and you think, okay, at some point life is going to be really good. But then for a period of time, after he dreams this dream, he has two very dissatisfied wives, and he's receiving most of his children from the wife that he's not in love with, and they're not getting along with each other. But yet, he is a man of promise. Okay? His name doesn't mean promise. All right. Let's go to chapter 31. Jacob has been very prosperous during his stay with Laban. In fact, there have been some jealousies that have arisen because of in Laban's family because of how productive that Jacob has been. And apparently, as they have worked together, lived together, Laban's been manipulating Jacob quite a bit. He's changed his wages about 10 times, and Jacob's about to have his fill. So, in beginning in chapter 31 in verse 1, now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what our father's he has gained all this wealth. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. And so Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was, and said to them, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before, but the God of my father has been with me. And so they're planning this escape. I don't have enough minutes to read this account. But to make a long story short, Jacob tells Laban he's going to do one thing. He creates some distance physically between himself and Laban. And Laban thinks Jacob's still going to be around, but Jacob, true to the meaning of his name, has deceived Laban. His daughters have deceived Laban. And they decide to get out of town. They're taking a lot of what Laban owned with them. In fact, Rachel goes in and sneaks into Laban's tent, and she steals his foreign gods and takes them with her. She's really trying to get back at him, I think, is her motive behind that. Actually, I hope that's her motive behind that. Kind of a lesser of two evils sort of thing. And so once again, he's running away by means of deceit. After this, they have the birth of more children. And we are, the children have already been born. Let's go down, I'm going to have to skip some. Let's go down to chapter 32. In chapter 32, as Jacob is leaving Laban, there's this planned reunion with Esau. And Jacob is terrified of Esau because he knows he deceived him. And he knows his brother wants his blood. Or at least did, about 20 years has passed. And so what Jacob does is he gets his servants well ahead of him to go meet with Esau and his servants and say, look at all of these gifts I want to give you. I would like to give you these gifts, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of animals. and would like to meet with you. And so Esau says, yeah, great. You know, let's plan this. But Jacob is still nervous. Jacob is still very afraid. He's so afraid that he decides to divide his party into two camps, thinking if Esau is going to deceive him and trick him, then if one of his camps gets wiped out, then the other will survive. Okay? And so he actually has Leah go up ahead of him, and Rachel will go up ahead of him. Finally, he meets up with his brother Esau, and it's a happy reunion. While he's bowing down seven times before Esau, Esau grabs him and embraces him and kisses him, and they have a very, I guess in Jacob's mind, a pleasantly surprising reunion. And so, once again, something good is happening. They don't wind up staying together at that location that much, but at least that issue has been made better. Now we get into my favorite story in the whole Jacob saga. I want to spend at least 5 minutes on this. Beginning in chapter 32, verse 22. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. And he took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. After a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket. And Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. And then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So he called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip. Let's reread, beginning verse 27. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. In other words, deceiver. Then he said, you shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Okay, and he received the blessing. And Jacob saw that experience as him having wrestled with God. Anybody know what the name Israel means? To strive? Yeah, in a broad generic sense, Israel, there can be a lot of words that can be under the name of the Israel umbrella, but the word struggle is probably the most predominant name. And so now Jacob is no longer named deceiver, but now he's named a struggler, one who struggles. But he's overcome, and he's been blessed. I know a young lady who is a believer, not from here. She recently gave a valedictorian address, and she was talking, and it was in a Christian school environment, and she was talking about how she struggled so hard. She has the highest, she had a 4.2, I think, GPA, and she's going to college on a cross-country scholarship. She's won several cross-country meets, you know, meets with 200 people, and she's finished first, second, or third place consistently. And so she's been awarded this, but she pushes herself and she pushes herself. She pushed herself so hard that she wound up in the hospital. She pushed herself physically and academically so much that she wound up having what a lot of people would call a nervous breakdown. Now, that's not a clinical name, but she kind of went into an emotional crisis. And she was praying with her minister about it, and he said, you know, he said, I think there's part of the gospel that you're missing. He said, you know, you're trying to be the super achiever, and I think you're missing the fact that someone else is guiding you. You need to work as hard as you can, but if you put more on yourself than you can handle, you're really dishonoring God, because that's His job. That's His job to take care of what you can't. And so she said, she began to pray about that and where her heart was and her own desire to make these grades and her own desire to be the best runner. And she said it was the scariest thing that she'd ever experienced. Now, why do you think she would say that? She said, taking this to God was terrifying. Why would she say that? She was giving control to somebody else. Okay? She was struggling with God. She was kind of fitting the name of Israel. Okay? Now, in this story, it says Jacob overcame. He didn't defeat God. You don't defeat God. But he came out a victor over his own demons. And he was able to request to be blessed by God. And he was blessed. You know, Jacob wound up leaving this scene with a limp, didn't he? And the impression I'm left with is that he had that limp for the rest of his life. And when we encounter God, sometimes we are so convicted by whatever our issue is or whatever our trying to work out on our own is or our sin is that we're left with a bit of a limp in our conscience. And so this really is a very transformational episode in the life of Jacob. I wish I had time to go into this more. But Genesis 32, go back and reread it. It's very, very powerful. I wish I had time to go into chapter 33. I'm not going to have time for that, but it leads into chapter 34, where you have the situation of Jacob's sister Dinah, his half-sister Dinah, being raped by the Hivites, by Shechem. And what happens here is even more deceit, not directly by Jacob, but you wind up seeing his sons involved in quite a bit of deceit. What's happened is the father of the perpetrator, Hamor, he said, you know, look, he said, what can we do for you? Let's overlook this. You come, marry our girls. Our guys can marry your girls. You can work. You can start your own businesses, your own commercial enterprises. You know, we can be good. And so Jacob's sons start thinking very deceitfully. And they start thinking, well, yeah, maybe okay, but it wouldn't be right to give our daughters and our sisters over to men who've never been circumcised. So you circumcise your men, and then we've got a deal. Again, deceit and trickery existing in the life of Jacob, even though he's had this moment of transformation, even though his name's been changed, even though it looks like he's repented, he's still being plagued by this issue of deceit. Because what happens is the guys are in pain after the circumcision, and Simeon and Levi, they get their guts and they go with their swords and they murder all of those Hivite guys. And then they take the women and the children and all of their possessions for themselves. And Jacob hears about it and he's furious. And he confronts them about it. You know, this is wrong. And they say, well, what they did was wrong to Dinah. You know, was that right? And that's their reasoning. And so the end of the Jacob narrative in chapter 25 is a recap of a lot of things. There's more loss, there's more pain. Deborah, who was Rebekah's nurse, dies. Rachel finally gives birth to Benjamin, but she dies in childbirth because that's been a very difficult process. But at the same time, Jacob has been rewarded in boundless ways. He's become very wealthy. You have this list of all of his sons who will carry forth the promise that's been promised to him by God. And even though many of them have engaged in deceit, and Reuben himself has committed a pretty vile sin, it wasn't just Simeon and Levi, yet they're going to carry the banner for the Lord in the middle of all of their failings. This extraordinarily beautiful close to chapter 35 is after Isaac dies. Jacob's gone back and he's taken his people there. He and Esau together bury their father. 20 years prior, it didn't look like that was going to happen, did it? So we have to look, and by the way, I love the title, Jacob Trailblazer with a Purpose. But when we think of this idea of a purpose, we don't necessarily think there won't be challenges along the way. But we don't really anticipate challenges like Jacob experienced with his brother, with his wives, with his sons, with himself. Challenges all over the place. You know, he was a deceiver. That was the meaning of his name. But in the middle of all of that pain, there were places along the way to where, you know, he would encounter God and he would hear the blessing. There was one occasion I haven't had time to go over. He would pray to God, but it's kind of like he was making a deal to God. He's getting better, but he's trying to place a condition on God. God, if you'll do this, then I'll do this for you. Well, you know, at least he was getting closer to God, but that's not good either. He ultimately has this struggle with God and his name is changed. And as Jacob's life is transformed, we begin to get this picture of someone who, in many ways, looked defeated all the way through the process. And it looked like, you know, his promise wouldn't be fulfilled. At least to many of us, if we were in this situation, would we begin to doubt the promise? It'd be easy for us to doubt that promise, wouldn't it? Very easy. One of the messages we get here is that, yes, our life can have a purpose. God has blessings planned for us, because we experience boatloads of pain doesn't mean that his blessings aren't nevertheless going to come true. And it doesn't mean that we can't be blessed right now in the middle of the pain. Jacob found himself blessed in the middle of the pain. And he also knew that there was a blessing that would be come from his fruit even after he died. And the same thing is true with us. You know, you might be struggling mightily with pain in your life. You might be wondering, is God blessing me? You might be struggling with your own sin like Jacob did. But yet there's a blessing. There's a promise. You can be transformed like Jacob was. Or you may be, your faith may be shaking because you're thinking, all of this is happening, but yet I'm a Christian. You know, I'm a Christian, but I don't really feel that different because all of this stuff is still going on around me. Sometimes the blessing is there, but it's not always felt. You ever heard the word faith? That's where that comes in a very powerful way. And so we're extending this invitation to you tonight. With the message of Jacob as the backdrop and his challenges and the sin that seemed to permeate his life. But he didn't stop believing in the promise. He didn't stop clinging to the hope of the blessing. And in the end, he was transformed and he had peace with his Lord. The invitation is ours as we stand and sing.